Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the John, Paul, and Mike Show! How are you doing,
John? That was one of your best intros ever.
That's because I said ladies and gentlemen, and somewhere is going to take exception for me.
I'm actually going to take exception to this because today it's the John, Paul, and Gary Show!
That is the first time a guest has ever usurped our intro.
Oh, wow, this is going to be an interesting show. Why don't you introduce yourself then, Gary?
Yeah, okay, which title do I want to use? In welcoming myself to the show, I'm Gary Beyer, and I am running to be your mayor.
Wow, isn't it great? Like, this is a whole new dimension for us to have a businessman slash radio broadcaster on the show. Mm-hmm. He is going to...
Pick it apart.
He's going to he's going to teach us a few lessons.
You know, I shouldn't say radio broadcaster. I do have that beautiful opportunity where I get to do a radio show with Alan Perry, Tech Talk on Saturdays. Sadly, now I can't anymore since I declared that I'm going to be running. That I'm not allowed on that show anymore.
Former radio broadcaster.
Former.
That sucks so much. I really like Alan. I think he's very intelligent.
Alan's awesome, yeah.
I think he's great. But I think you are the same, and I listened to that show to hear you.
I like that. Thank you.
Okay. Well,
is that enough of a love fest here or what?
Yeah, you're either going to be mayor, or you're going to be back on the show in November.
You know, I'll own the damn radio station, okay?
So,
okay, first of all, disclaimer.
Yeah.
Disclaimer.
Yeah.
So Gary is running to be mayor of Victoria.
Victoria.
Okay.
Yeah. Not your mayor necessarily.
Election,
that's you, Sanich.
In the last election, I helped raise money for Lisa Helps.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? In large part, because I didn't want Dean Fortin to be mayor.
How do you think about that hindsight-wise now?
Well, we'll talk about that.
Turn the
I'm
table.
I'm not going Absolutely. To be working for any mayoral candidate this time around, and so that's just out there. Because I don't want anyone phoning. Well, people don't phone in here, do they?
No.
Oh, sorry.
No. We'll talk.
No one cares that much.
So there you go. There's my disclaimer.
I
4 years later, what do we got?
I didn't support any particular candidate last municipal election. Although I have praised Lisa Helps in the past for a number of things, and criticized her for a number of things too. But always loved the... And funny enough, I said this to her when we interviewed her last election, when she was running, when she announced she was running. I said, you know, Lisa Helps as city councilor. It's pretty awesome because she's like, she's going to turn over every table and turn over every rock and ask things like, why do we do things this way when we, you know, a very out of the box thinker, which I think is a genuine quality of hers. Not sure how well that would translate to being mayor. And I think a lot of maybe what we're seeing now is we've got an out-of-the-box thinker who's the mayor in a city where there's obviously a lot of people still love to think inside the box. So that's kind of my take on it. And then I've just met Gary for the first time today. So
oh, did you? I've known Gary for...
Which is weird because we both
73 years?
Not bad. Not bad.
Well, and of course I've worked in tech for 38 years. No, not 38 years. 28 years.
Yep.
Wow.
So it's kind of weird.
Wow.
That we
it really is actually.
Haven't crossed paths before, but
all right. Well, let's. Okay, Gary. Why are you running for mayor? Give us
straight
your
goods.
Best shot, buddy.
Straight goods. I'm going to stick to point. The actual idea of my running for mayor didn't really crop up until I was walking to work one day.
Where do you work, by the way?
I am co-owner of Tesseract 2.0 Computing on Broughton Street. Let's plug it. What the heck?
No, absolutely. You mean the Broughton Street that's been closed for 3.5 years because of bike lane stuff?
No, yes. Not that Broughton. It's the Broughton that was actually closed for 2.5 months because of a water main project.
Okay.
We did our best to mitigate any damages to us. I guess we did a good job because our sales, they surpassed our expectations, which was kind of nice. It was a lot of work. It was
Are
like
you saying that everyone should have a water main work done in front of their
home? No. I'm saying that there businesses in
I'm
this
teasing.
Town. So I know you are. Businesses in town pay a heck of a lot of tax. It's an inordinate amount. It is more than 50% of our city budget is business taxes. Hmm. Yet businesses have no say in this town
because they have no vote.
We have no
unless
vote.
Unless you live in Victoria.
Unless we happen to live in Victoria. Yeah. I'm actually quite fortunate. I live in Victoria. I own a business in Victoria. I walk around Victoria. I don't bicycle around Victoria anymore because my arthritis says I can't. It hurts too damn much. I drive my big-ass truck in Victoria, and I drive down to the waterfront if I want to take a walk along Dallas Road. I was walking down Fort Street one day during the beginnings of the construction phase of the bike lanes, and I heard someone screaming at a bicyclist, and the bicyclist screaming back. And I realized how much anger there was in this city. I've never seen it before. I've been in the city since 1969, came as a wee lad when mom and dad decided to move us here. Didn't have much of a choice. Grew up here. I've spent most of my life in Victoria. I've lived downtown for the last 17 years, and I have not seen this kind of anger. I have not seen this kind of petty crime. I've seen my truck broken into every week for the past 5 years now. Every week my truck gets broken into.
What? Where do you... Okay.
I live right up where the Shell station is, corner Fernwood and Yates Street. We've got the Boys and Girls Club, the situation there. And every time they fill up that Boys and Girls Club, my truck gets starting broken into. My apartment has been tried to break into. They were caught by my landlady while I was out of town. Not a really cool thing. There's anger out there. I get angry about it. So the thought came, you know what? It's time to do something. My dad taught me that.
I commend you for that, okay?
My dad taught me that.
Paul to run. I think it's extraordinarily courageous, and I commend you for that.
It has to be done. It truly has to be done. People have to care about their town. I've been in this town for a long time. The town's been fairly good to me. I've managed to make some money. I've managed to keep a business going. I've managed to employ people. I do okay. Now it's time to give back.
So I've also lived in Victoria for almost as many years as you. I was born in 1973 here. So I grew up, and I've seen a lot of issues throughout the years, you know, crime in the 80s before the mall was built downtown was atrocious, and so I grew up here as well, and I remember that it wasn't always roses and fairy tales in Victoria as well. So are you suggesting in your previous description that Victoria has never been this bad for crime?
I am suggesting that the statistics are telling us that violent crime is down. What I'm truly suggesting on top of that is that petty crime is up and nobody's even bothering reporting it anymore. When is the last time you actually saw a bicycle cop on the street? When is the last time that you made a phone call to the police and it didn't take 25, 35, 40 minutes to get them there if they showed up at all?
Oh, never.
They don't.
I remember making a call like that 12 years ago, and you know, police never bothered to come.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
This is not a new problem.
This is the problem every city is facing. Every city's facing budget constraints. Sadly, we have a police force that has a $53 million budget, and we're being told by police that they don't have enough money or resources to do the jobs properly. Well, I'm sorry. That's one of the highest per capita cost police forces in Canada. Works out to, I believe, $500, if you include Esquimalt, it's around $500 per capita. Downtown Vancouver, and the police here will have you say, well, you know, we've got downtown Victoria, and we've got a homeless problem, and we have to deal with this, and we have to be social workers. Mm-hmm. Downtown Vancouver's police budget works out to, I believe, about $373 per capita. They've got the Lower East Side. Mm. Where are discrepancies here?
Yeah, wouldn't you say that somebody who's living in the Lower East Side would have very similar, if not worse, complaints than what you have?
We would have the same issues, and yet our budget is approximately $127 per capita higher, and we have police that say we haven't got time to deal with car break-ins. Mm-hmm. They tell me to report it, and that if there is a trend, they might start looking towards it.
Right.
We've got police that I go and say, you know what? We've got people flying up Fort Street from Cook Street heading towards Linden. By the time they hit Linden, they're doing 80 kilometers an hour. There's going to be a death. And I'm told we don't have the time to police that. When something happens, we'll look at it. Mm. And I'm told by a number of police officers that it's the bean counters telling them that they don't have the time or the money.
Yet they have no problem sitting at the end of Blanchard by Mayfair Mall catching people going 65 in the 50 zone.
Isn't it amazing that Blanchard at Mayfair Mall turns into Saanich very, very quickly?
So, if I could...
Look, I'm not here to be down on the police. What I am here is that City Hall, for a long time now, has been thinking... You say it's been thinking outside the box lately. No. It's been thinking in that same damn box that every other city's been thinking for 20, 30, 40, 50, 100 years, and it's getting us nowhere. It's not improving the situation for anybody.
So how do you go about, and I'm not disagreeing with you, how do you go about fixing the problems with the Victoria Police Department, which is frankly, as far as I'm concerned, go back to the beginning of my life?
Here's the easy thing. We need to go back to basics. Police need to be allowed to do their jobs. They don't need to be social workers. Social work, mental health, these are provincial issues. Housing is a provincial issue. All of this flows down to, we've got a problem in that the feds don't want to spend money, the province doesn't want to spend money, and we've got a city council and a mayor that goes, we'll spend it. No, not good enough anymore. Our police budget, frankly, at $53 million is just fine. Now let's let the police officers do their jobs. I know a number of them that say, please, let us get out there. Let us do our jobs. But they can't.
So instead of running for mayor, then why aren't you running for provincial MLA and fixing that problem? And didn't the provincial government just come up with a budget for housing?
No, the provincial government came up with money in conjunction with the feds and with the CRD for a total of $90 million for affordable housing. Right. Now, it's a beautiful plan. I've looked at it. I don't think $90 million is going to cover what they actually think it's going to be. You're not getting 2,000 housing units for $90 million. That works out to, I believe, $43,000 per housing unit. We haven't even looked at land yet.
Okay. So let me compartmentalize a little bit here. So I live in Saanich, and I don't come downtown because it's too busy. Okay, I don't come downtown because there are crime-related activities, homelessness that impact my life if I'm downtown. If that sounds arrogant, I'm sorry, that's just the way it is.
But John, okay? This is what I'm hearing from too many people.
Oh, okay, hold on, Gary. So there's that piece. But if I think about what this council mayor has done with regard to economic development, with regard to new business, with regard to construction, I think they've done a really good job. So how do you reconcile those?
Wow, John, pieces? I'm glad you think they've done a really good job. Do you think that anybody in Victoria can afford to buy these $500,000 and $600,000 condos? Who do you actually think is buying it? Why do you think we're going to have an influx, if the mayor is correct, that we're going to have 10,000 to 15,000 new people by 2020? It's not Victoria people that are spending the money. That's fantastic that we're building housing, but we're not building homes. We are not housing people that live here, people who can't afford to live here. Every city in North America has run into this problem where they say, if we build more, we're going to end the homeless problem. So why does New York still have a homeless problem? Why does San Francisco have a homeless problem?
Well,
why does
Vancouver? Who's going to buy these condos?
Well, it's outsiders that are already buying. Those that can't afford to live here can still not afford to live here. And I don't give a damn if you build 500, 1,000, 10,000 new condos in this city. They're going to be out of the price range of the people who serve you your coffee. Who's looking out for the working poor? Who's looking out for those that can't even afford to rent a place that is supposed to be rent affordable at $1,400 for a bachelor suite?
Yeah, they live in Langford.
No, even Langford's becoming a little bit high priced.
No, I'm on the same page.
This won't change. This is not going to change to where price, house of price,
price what are you going to do that's going to change
half. We have to look more at the CRD model that has been used for 50 years almost now. The CRD, if you look around town in Saanich, in Victoria, we've got them on Gladstone, there's a CRD housing project. On Miller Avenue in Saanich, they're all over the place. Camas Court, I believe there's one. They build townhouses of which X number of percent are considered affordable housing. The rest are market rent. This is very, very simple. You who can afford it are going to rent a place at $1,500, $1,600 a month. 25% of those units, or 30%, whichever way you want to put it, are for those who, for whatever reason, need a hand up to rebuild their lives. I was actually very, very fortunate. When I was 22 years old, I had some major surgery and I could not work for a year. The CRD housing model was there for me. It meant I could feed my kid, It meant my wife could be at home, and it meant I could feed myself without having to worry that I didn't have enough money to do anything, let alone pay rent.
I totally appreciate that, Gary, but
we need more of that.
But there's a and I won't disagree with you. However, and I think this is a key point, this is not about a hand up. Because the guy who's serving coffee's never going to be able to afford market rents in Victoria, period.
However,
and so how do you fix that?
Wait a minute. Give that person a chance to actually better themselves instead of having to work 13, 14 hours a day at three different part-time jobs to afford rent and food. You give that person a bit of a help up, you might be able to get that person back into school to better themselves, to get better jobs. You're not going to fix it just by building high-end condos.
But you need service workers. And the
yes,
problem
you
is,
do.
And this is the same problem Whistler has, the same problem
we have,
Vancouver
we have
has.
Approximately 300,000 minimum wage job holders in British Columbia.
Right.
Minimum wage jobs are never meant for the person to be able to feed and house themselves permanently. Traditionally, the minimum wage job was that 15, 16-year-old's first job, part-time, working at a coffee shop, slinging coffee while they're going back to school. We've got people working at restaurants here that are becoming nurses, they're becoming doctors, they're bettering themselves. They're using their part-time jobs and their entry-level jobs to keep themselves in money while they do things.
Mm-hmm.
It's not supposed to
That's
be permanent.
Not everybody.
No, it isn't. However, if you give the rest of those a chance at a hand up, you'd be surprised what can actually happen. And if you build enough of those units that are properly subsidized to help people, you will eradicate homelessness. You're not going to do it by building $500,000 and $600,000 condos. It's not going to happen.
I'm not squaring the circle here on how you think. I mean, when everybody's had their hand, when everyone's been helped up.
Thank you.
And get the terms right.
Then who serves dinner at the restaurant now?
There's always going to be that new crop of young people looking for jobs, their first entry-level jobs. And you know what? There are those.
But we're a service industry town. You need professionals who work in the service industry.
The professionals aren't making
affordable living.
The professionals aren't making minimum wage. I know a young lady working at one of the pubs here in Victoria. She's buying a house in Langford. She's a waitress at a restaurant. She can make very, very good money. And those who apply themselves make fantastic money.
Of course they do, yeah.
Sadly, not everybody is going to do that. However, you have those stuck that are in a poverty loop that would like to, give them a hand up. Let's try it. Instead of just saying, we're going to build more housing and that'll take care of the problem. It never has,
well,
it never will.
And I'd like to dissect the issue a little bit. I'm not disagreeing with anything you've just said. So let's put that to the side. I think there's two other areas, though. One of them is just the general cost of housing, period. If you're a young person, you just graduated from college, and you're looking at how many years you have to work to pay off a mortgage, and there's lots of studies, I hope you've read some of them, that show, you know, the number of years you have to work to pay off your home is triple what it was 40 years ago. And it's double what it was when I got out of college. And so fundamentally, we have a whole generation coming up.
In actual fact, you're still only going to qualify for a 25 or 30 year mortgage, so it's going to take you that long, unless you really mess up and remortgage your house and remortgage your house and remortgage your house. So the time frame of paying off a mortgage hasn't doubled and tripled because you wouldn't be alive that long. What has happened is your costs have gone up because of the price of the homes.
Mm-hmm.
CD Howe did a study, and this drives home the next thing I want to talk about. I want to talk about how long it takes City Hall to actually let you get your development permit to get into the ground to start building your house or building your condos or building your townhouses. City Hall Institute basically said, Vancouver is the number they used, $250,000 to $275,000 of that cost is because of delays and delays and delays in getting you out of the ground and getting it built. Can you imagine how your, actually in Vancouver it was higher. Can you imagine that Vancouver house at 1.2 or 1.5 million? Because of city delays, there's $300,000 or $400,000 in costs that are part of that house.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Why does it take a city 60, 70, 80, 90, up to 120 days to issue a business license? It's insanity. 30 days. Get it done. If you cease with the confrontational attitudes between city, citizens, and developers on developing a piece of property, if you can bring that down to a year,
so
you're going to save $100,000, $150,000 cost per unit. Let's get it more affordable by being more efficient.
So can I just say around the business licenses, this is a deja vu moment, because this is exactly what Lisa Helps was saying 4 years ago when we interviewed her, and how, you know, she wanted to make City Hall more business friendly and, you know, expedite these processes. So you're saying it hasn't happened?
It hasn't.
And so how are you going to make it happen where she's failed?
This is a really, really easy thing. Council and mayor give direction to administration. Administration actually has to do their jobs. If council and mayor say to administration, we get this down to 30 days, because you know what the alternative is? It's 30 days or it is considered to have been approved. So if too many mess ups by City Hall staff happen, things change.
Yet the city appears to be in a construction boom. So there would be some that say
I've never seen such low retail vacancy as I've seen.
Retail vacancy right now sits at about, they say 3.8. I think it's actually more like about 4.5. So yes, let's call it a little less than half of what it was 4 years ago. That's a natural cycle of economy. That's nothing this City Hall did. The entire country's economy is roaring at 100%. It's better than it's ever been in the past 30, 40 years. I don't think City Hall can take credit for something that is happening worldwide.
Regardless,
that's just like Donald Trump taking credit for Obama policy.
That's right.
Come on.
Absolutely. And so every good politician should. The reality as well is our unemployment rate in Victoria is extraordinarily low.
It is extraordinarily low.
Yet we have this poverty issue and this homelessness issue that's in our face, you know, daily, right?
You know, I'm, as you stated at the beginning of this podcast, you're bringing up these points around poverty and the really disadvantaged. I don't think a mayor of a city can fix that.
No, like, it takes like it a, takes a, very it, much it, like it takes a community to raise a child. Frankly, it takes a country to take care of this problem. It's a national issue. 3 or 4 months ago, I had to go to Halifax for again reasons, and I decided for 2 days to do nothing but wander around downtown Halifax. Downtown Halifax has some very, very poverty-stricken areas.
Sure.
At no time did I feel in danger in any way. At no time was I asked for any money. At no time was I approached to make feel uncomfortable in any way. And I found that incredible. I actually found it incredible. They have a park in downtown Halifax. Beautiful big park. It actually has rules posted. No, you're not sleeping here. Not happening. No, you're not camping here. No, you're not lighting fires here. You're not erecting tents here. You're not drinking alcohol here. They have rules, and people follow them. I'm not sure it's because Halifax actually enforces the rules, or maybe Halifax is a little more polite being Acadian. I don't know. But it was a little bit refreshing.
Sure.
I found one person in those 2 days who was standing on the street just outside the Lord Nelson Hotel with his cap out.
Now, how much of that is because... And I don't know the answer to this, but how much of that is because Victoria is more welcoming to people with these social issues? We're the warmest place in Canada to be in the middle of winter.
You've actually just said exactly what I've been saying for 20, 30, 40 years. It's a national issue. We have people that come from all over Canada to be here in Vancouver because, you know what? If you're going to sleep outside...
Yeah.
It's warm. You're not going to freeze to death.
Unlikely.
Unlikely.
It
does happen. We do have some cold snaps where, you know, if you're not careful, hyperthermia will kill you.
Yeah.
However, if you're caught outside in Toronto or Winnipeg or, heaven forbid, Regina, you're freezing to death.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's a warm and welcoming city. And for the most part, people are understanding of this. But we have a council that frankly needs to get proactive, and we need, instead of asking the federal government for money for a new pool and asking the provincial government for money for a new pool, how about we ask for money for social workers? How about we ask for money for frontline workers? How about we ask for money for better shelters? How about we ask for money for food for these people? We know we have the problem, and it's a federal and provincial jurisdictional problem. We need to bring them in full-time to help with this. We can't afford it on our own anymore, over and above everything we're spending money on.
Okay, and so I'll circle back then, Gary. I don't disagree with you on any of that.
I love it.
However, I've heard the same thing being said at every single election in Victoria's history.
And here's my problem. For 4 years, we've been told by this mayor that she's going to fix homelessness. Why is she now all of a sudden saying, my top priority is fixing homelessness?
Well, Dean Fortin had the coalition to end homelessness. Part of its mandate, part of its mandate was to try to get some of this money. I mean, they put together an organization to do this.
Yes, I know they did.
And so what's happened? Why has it not worked? And how is it going to work when you're the mayor?
One of the first things you'll find if you ever do business on your own, cut through any bureaucracy, you get stuff done. You got to be able to make decisions, and you have to be able to make them now. Stop studying bullshit to death. You know what? You know who makes money on studies? People doing studies. Let's do more studies. Enough of the bullshit. ENN line. How many studies do we have?
Oh, yeah.
As Ken Marish said,
how about,
I'll pay for it.
How about amalgamation? How many studies do we have on amalgamation?
Wait, wait. Okay, listen.
Let's go.
Let's go. Okay, we're at about 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Which is generally
the
lifetime. I know, this is great. We go for hours. Why don't we end it with bike lanes? What has the impact been on that? And what's happened? Is the parking issue real or not?
The parking issue is
so I get.
Let's finish
the
with these two.
The police piece and the homelessness piece.
Let's finish.
Can I talk about the third tranche of my home, my housing issue?
Well,
I've covered the first two.
Well, sure.
Oh man, let's go.
And then we'll go to that.
Okay.
All right. You going to edit that out?
No. Because it appears that Gary, we're going to convince him to run for something.
You know what, radio can be really fun.
All right. So I mentioned that there was two other areas of housing. And one in particular is this philosophical idea that of downtowns. And we see models like Portland and that sort of thing. If you make downtowns more friendly, and this is going to parlay nicely into the next issue, if you make cities more friendly and you build more residences downtown, you're going to build community, there's going to be people there, and therefore there's going to be less empty spaces for which crime can be concentrated. And I think that's part of what we're seeing around, obviously, the housing boom of these really expensive condos downtown, but also bike lanes and the like. So do you take issue with that philosophy, or do you think we're just implementing it poorly?
My God. The word community is so overused and it's so abused, it isn't funny. One of the friendliest communities I was ever in was, I spent a year when I was 16 in my family hometown in Germany, a village of 900 people where everybody knows everybody. They didn't need to build big giant buildings for everybody to have community. They didn't need to build malls for everybody to have community. You know what? It was a 900-year-old village with 900 people, and it was a community. By just putting up flags and banners somewhere saying, we are the community.
Well, and housing, and bike lanes, and everything else.
Again, would you take that village of 900 people and say, we're going to build an 80-story tower here so we can have community? You wouldn't do it.
No, but what we would do is you'd say, here's a crime-ridden area. What are we going to do about it? And somebody came up with the idea of saying, instead of trying to battle crime, you know, day in and day out and losing the battle, why don't we rethink how this area
okay,
is
used? I'm gonna agree with you on this. So what are we gonna do? Are we gonna tear down McDonald's corner Douglas and Blanchard or Douglas and View and say we're gonna put community there? That McDonald's is already part of the downtown community.
Sure it is.
Are we gonna go to Pandora and say, wow, let's build an even bigger building beside our place that will give us community? That's not gonna work. Do you build community by building giant towers? No. Are you going to change the entire flavor of the James Bay community by infilling it with big giant towers?
Well, they did.
Well, the big giant towers have been there for a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Orchard House has been there a long, long time.
And they were hugely controversial.
Oh, yes, they were, as was View Towers when it happened.
Absolutely.
Anytime you get giant development, it really changes the flavor of what you would consider community.
Yeah.
Generally, When we say by infilling and we're going to bring families to town, I believe that was tried about 35 years ago.
I think they've
ago.
Given up on families.
Of course they have. Because
I
the
think
whole,
it's
the
more
whole,
about
the entire Harris Green project of 30 years ago is a failure. It's an absolute failure. We have these nice condos that have beautiful setbacks. When you look at Regent's Park on Yates and Vancouver, it's a gorgeous building still. I think it's 35 years old now. It's gorgeous. It has beautiful lawns. It's got setbacks. These people became part of a community. And they paid extra to have sidewalks with inlay tiles on them. And the whole Pandora Corridor was part of that. Boy, all this money these people spent, look what they finally got. That beautiful little school that was St. Andrews, which was a really nice addition and has been St. Louis College, geez, 125 years, 130 years on site, mm-hmm. gone.
Gone, yeah.
The church may not tell you it's gone because of our place. I was on that board of directors. St. Andrews is gone because of our place.
So I'm not talking about social housing and the concentration. That's a whole other issue.
Because if we concentrate, we create ghettos.
What I'm talking about is people that are actually living in a space as opposed to just the hollowing out. And the opposite, if you will, is the downtown where everybody drives in the morning, parks their car, goes to work, mm-hmm. maybe has lunch at a restaurant downstairs, gets back in their car and drives home, and from 5 o'clock every night until 7 o'clock every morning, it's a ghost town.
Well, that was Victoria in the 70s.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And that's...
We actually didn't have a We didn't have a city hall that changed that. We had a business community that changed that. We had businesses decide to do something.
Well, we had the condo boom. That's what happened.
In the 70s, we didn't have much of a condo boom. That was the 80s and 90s.
Yeah.
And in the 80s, it was kind of iffy because in 82, everybody went broke.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
Remember, all right, let's talk about bike lanes.
Bike lanes, parking, and then we'll get you again.
Bike lanes are interesting. Toronto, today, another person died on a bike in an intersection. There have been a lot of bike deaths in Toronto. We've been very, very lucky here that there haven't. There have been a few. I'm not going to blame bicyclists. In a lot of cases, I'm not going to blame drivers. I'm going to blame how the infrastructure is designed. I'm going to blame ignorance on the part of both drivers and bicyclists. This morning, walking in, saw a woman screaming out at a bicyclist for riding on a sidewalk against a red light while there were pedestrians, in the crosswalk, while there were pedestrians in that crosswalk. It wasn't a pretty sight what the woman screamed back at the person, the bicyclist. We have a lot of people breaking rules. We have a lot of people speeding, turning left without stopping on red lights. They're just, nobody's really following rules anymore. Mm. Let's get back to real enforcement. Let's make sure people know the rules of the road. Bike lanes themselves, we need them. We maybe don't need them the way they were forced on us by the mayor. We maybe don't need them built without having a real budget for them until it's explained to people where this money's coming from. Mm-hmm. Maybe we don't need to spend $2.7 million kilometer on bike lanes. Just saying, there's better ways of doing things. You can consult, you can force, or you can consult and do what you want anyways. So, and that's how the city's been doing it.
So
let's just do it and who cares. I've had business people who have been paying taxes in this town, business taxes, so we're talking high, for 30 years plus. And they were told, too bad that it's hurting your business, get with the program. I'm sorry, when somebody spends, let's call it $20,000 a year on average, over 30 years, the city's got a lot of money from that business person. And to be told, too bad, a little bit of a wrong way of doing things.
So,
yes, we need bike lanes, and it's got to be part of it. The buzzword is regional integrated transportation strategy.
Right.
Right now, do you bicycle at all?
No.
Well, let's turn this around. Hey.
I do. And I biked into town.
Really?
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go. The bike lanes in Saanich, do they look anything like Victoria's bike lanes? No. The bike lanes in View Royal don't look like Saanich's bike lanes, and the ones in Colwood, I don't think they exist. And Oak Bay just has a little painting on the side on the road that says the bikes are allowed here. So, if you're a bicyclist in Oak Bay and you come to Victoria and you go, "What's that green stuff?" Well, that's where you're supposed to turn your bicycle around. What do you mean? I just turned my bicycle around on the road. Nobody knows what they're supposed to do anymore.
No.
So we need something that hasn't been done in a long time. I grew up in town here. We had what's called Tom Thumb Safety Village. And they taught us how to ride our bicycles.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah. That was out at Wandafuca.
Yeah, yeah.
They taught us how to ride our bicycles safely. I rode a bicycle since my first bicycle I got at 7 years old. I had one of the first Mustang 5-speeds in Victoria. It was really kind of cool. That was when I was 8. That was fun. I learned how to ride safely. I learned how to protect myself. I also rode motorcycle. It's not much different. You got to watch out or you're going to get killed.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't care how safe you make things. If you're not watching out, you'll get killed.
Oh, sure.
This issue of biking, I think is as important as all the others.
I think and it is one of the most important.
Whether bike lanes or not. I'll bike in from Saanich, I go along the Goose, and into town. I am startled by how many people are biking.
I'm not.
Hundreds and hundreds.
What startles?
In fact, hey. The safety required on the Goose, like if you just lose your concentration for a minute
you're getting hurt.
You're going to get hurt.
Yep.
It is like a friggin' freeway there.
Yeah.
So this is a big issue.
It's and it bicycling. God, again, we all grew up riding bicycles. Bicycling doesn't need to be an issue. We need to remain educated. We need councils to work together to provide an integrated strategy. We need drivers to be educated that this is part of what's happening. But we need to do it in a way that is best not just for one group, but works for all. Okay. These separated bike lanes, have you seen an ambulance try to make it through Fort Street during rush hour? You can't anymore. You just can't. There's nowhere, if you've got a bus on the right-hand side and you've got a truck on the left-hand side and then it's backed up and there's cars parked everywhere, you've got nowhere for these vehicles to move to let an ambulance through or a fire truck. The design is a disaster. It's an absolute disaster. Why do we have two-way bike lanes on one-way streets?
Was it, and I don't know the answer to that, maybe you do, but my understanding was that there was a lot of research and studies done and that this was a model that they borrowed from other cities.
Oh, God, I think Lisa looked at Portland, which seems to be your favorite city, and said, I want that model.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's just going to be anecdotal. I can't prove that.
I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. But what I do know is this was not part of an election platform. This was not consulted to the businesses along the corridors. This was, look what we're doing, too bad.
Well, she did say she was going to build, you know, change the model and build Victoria as a modern city. I mean, you know, she didn't necessarily fill in all the blanks, I guess. But
she didn't fill in any blanks.
I can't say I'm surprised.
I'm sorry. That's like Rob Ford saying, yeah, we're gonna cut the deficit by $50 million. How are you gonna do that? I don't know.
Okay. We're sitting in this amazing facility.
This is awesome
at Fort Tectoria. Yep. I just love this place. Thank you, Dan Gahn. Thank you, Rob Bennett.
Absolutely.
But that we're gonna have to leave our spot here pretty soon.
Oh, I like parking. It so much.
Parking.
Oh, the my goodness.
Every single my chamber goodness. Of commerce on the planet.
It doesn't need to be the bane. If you look at the Toronto model, and this council is very, very late to the table. A long time ago, Toronto decided if you're putting up a big giant tower, you're not only putting in parking for your people, you're putting in parking for the public. You will have a public parking space. You can charge for it. Hey, guess what? Strata councils can make money using parking. Mm-hmm. It's really that good. So what do we do here? We infill all the parking lots with condos and say, too bad to those people who have to come into our town and work. So we also have a council that's totally and diametrically opposed to any parkades, except wait for it. All of a sudden, Lisa Helps wants 100 parking spots under any housing that goes for the new Crystal Pool. Wait a sec. We're supposed to drive to go get fit? It's like driving to a pub. Sorry. Uh-uh. We absolutely need a new parkade. And everybody will say, well, that costs money. Well, you just look at people and say, guess how much those parkades are making the city right now? Lots. Million plus every year.
So that would be one of your platforms.
You know where I put it?
More where?
You know where I put it? Right beside Royal Athletic Park. There's that flat top parking lot. You put up a 3-4-5-story parkade, or you go underground and put social housing there on top of it. But you put parking there and you work with BC Transit and you have a couple of shuttle buses that go between there and downtown.
All right.
You just fixed most of your parking problem.
Solved.
This is great. You know, this guy is out of the blocks.
The DVDA had this brilliant idea. We're going to put park and rides in the city. So you can drive all the way from Souk and park around Mayfair Mall and take a bus. So you're going to spend an hour and a half in traffic so you can park at Mayfair Mall. Jeff Bray's a good guy. I had coffee with him this morning. What a cockamamie idea. Sorry. We're going to drive an hour and a half into town to take a bus.
We're going to interview this guy again. Sounds this good. Was so exciting.
Yeah. I'm having fun.
Gary Beyer, this is great. Once again, I commend you.
Thank you.
I think it takes a phenomenal amount of courage in an increasingly complicated city, in an increasingly complicated region.
You know, what I want to finish with this with is there are no pat answers to problems. There are tried and true methods of how not to do it. So let's really, instead of just saying we're going to do the same as every other city, let's start thinking differently. I don't want to be Vancouver. Victoria is a beautiful little city of 84,000 people. Let's make it a beautiful city of 100,000. Let's make it a beautiful city of 120,000. But let's keep it a beautiful city that isn't Seattle, that isn't Vancouver. If I want to be Vancouver, I'll move to Vancouver.
Okay, thanks for your time.
Gentlemen, thank you. Gentlemen, so thank you. Much.